Welcome to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. Election Day, just 35 days away now. Early voting starts in 21 days throughout South Florida. And this week, vote-by-mail ballots start going out. There is no Election Day any longer. Between the mail-in ballots, early voting, and the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, Florida voters have almost a month to make decisions and cast ballots. Despite of or because of all that time, Florida voters are hot commodities for the campaigns. About 130 million votes may be cast nationwide in this election. There could be around 9 million in Florida, and the margin of victory here could be slim. Over the past four presidential elections, the widest margin of victory for a popular vote winner in Florida, just 3%. That was in 2004 when George W. Bush carried the state for the Republicans. So Florida is expected to be close. The executive director of the Florida Democratic Party called Florida a 1% state. That puts a premium on every voter here. Voters like Ellen Walker.
My name is Ellen Walker. I've lived in Miami since I was 6 years old. I consider myself a Miami, and in my heart I am. And I now live in Broward County in Hollywood. Politically, I am a lifelong liberal.
A premium on voters like Charles Walter.
My name is Charles Walter. I live in Miami with my wife and daughter of 2 years old. And we moved down from New York 5 years ago. For me, it's where we're heading as a country and what the president represents, the policy that they're setting, the vision that they're setting for future generations.
A premium on voters like Kent Bondi.
My name is Kent Bondi. I've been living in South Florida since 1983. I've been an independent for a big share of the time that I've been here, and I'm really concerned with the direction this country is in.
I met Kent Bondi at a sidewalk cafe outside a strip mall in North Miami-Dade County. He was drinking a soda, wearing a t-shirt, and the kind of swimsuit that doubles as a pair of shorts. He's married, and his wedding band is a gold shark twisted around his ring finger. He couldn't miss it. On his t-shirt, a shark. And on his left calf, the scarred evidence of a shark bite. He was spearfishing 15 years ago in the Bahamas. He had speared a hogfish and chased it under some coral. He swam down, grabbed the spear, and tried to get the fish out. That's when an 8.5-foot-long bull shark got him. Took a chunk the size of a salad plate out of his left calf, missing his femoral artery by 3/16 of an inch, he says. He's retired now from the city of Miami Beach, where he worked in economic development. He's still a dive instructor and the captain of a dive boat where, yes, he dives with sharks. After growing up in Europe as a hotel brat, his dad worked for Hilton International, he moved to the United States and settled in South Florida in the early 1980s. He considers himself politically independent and says he didn't pay much attention to politics until about 8 years ago.
I came here for what this country is and the opportunities it provides, and I see that disappearing very, very, very quickly. And I think this election, more than any other time, is going to define our freedoms going forward. And I really see our way of life threatened.
What are those threats? To what do you attribute the concerns that you have about that way of life?
I always have compared to Europe, because I grew up in Europe, and I've seen, you know, heavily socialized governments over there, and the control they have on just about every aspect of life, in the form of astronomically high taxes with very little to show for it. And I see the same push here for a lot of the same things, and I think a lot of it's born out of, I think we're at a real turning point here. I think people don't see the same opportunities here, and so there's more of a reliance on the government to do something about the situation.
Bondi sees shades of that European socialism in the candidacy of Bernie Sanders before he dropped out of the race. Bondi calls Trump an unknown and says he's leaning toward the unknown.
You know, I would bill myself more as a conservative, but I'm seeing the rot on both sides of the aisle. I really, really am. And I think what really scares me is the complacency in the population in this country. People just aren't aware, and they're not educated about the issues, about the economics. They're more focused on, you know, no offense, they're focused on the nonsense that is so much part of the news today, the soundbite media, you know, and not focused on the meat and potatoes of what's really driving what's going on in the world.
He points to the economy, the national debt, and the stability of the U.S. dollar as a world currency. As we talk at this outdoor table, people are milling about, coming and going to the collection of restaurants and retailers lining the strip mall.
I don't have the answers. I really don't.
Are you hearing any answers, any anecdotes, though?
You know, I'm really not. I'm really not, and that's what really worries me. I don't think that this existing status quo is going to improve circumstances. I frankly see something big on the horizon in light of the whole global instability. I mean, a lot of our circumstances are driving the world's instability right now, economically, geopolitically, socioeconomically, and it frankly really worries me.
Now remember, this is a guy who has a hunk of his leg missing thanks to a shark bite and who regularly gets back in the water with sharks. This election for Kent Bondi is both personal and global.
What would you like your fellow voters, your fellow Floridian voters, to know about your worldview that's shaping your politics for this election cycle?
I think so. I think we have to look at it from the bigger perspective. You know, everybody's like, oh, well, you know, jobs are disappearing from America, you know, and my wife was a victim of that. She just lost her job 2 months ago, 21 years with the company, and the writing has been on the wall. She's been training offices in India and Mexico. So, you know, when you're paying somebody, you know, with benefits and the everything else, you're paying them, you know, $50-$60 an hour, when you can basically get the same work for pennies on the dollar overseas. We're a global economy, whether we like it or not. That's what's going to drive, you know, that's what's going to drive companies overseas. So you can't really blame companies for outsourcing. You know, maybe if we improved, you know, maybe if we improved the tax climate here. I mean, we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world right now. I mean, so you have to create some incentive for companies to want to stay here, you know, and you know, when you're talking $15 an hour minimum wage, guess what? You know, you're going to see automated machines, you know, taking over people's jobs. It's just a reality. And as far as we're concerned, as far as people here in Florida, I mean, you have to look at it from the larger perspective. And yeah, well, it's, you know, you might want to think about diversifying what it is you can do. Now, my wife's trying to rethink what she wants to do at this stage. And it's really not easy at our age. But you have to be, I guess you have to be flexible, and you have to be, you know, you have to look. We need to try and figure out what opportunities are brought to the table by the candidates we're going to elect. And I think that's really one of the driving points of this election cycle.
Kent Bondi, retired city economic development professional, dive boat captain, shark bite survivor, and survivor of a couple of South Florida real estate collapses. The last one remains fresh as he worries about the real estate market here now.
You look at who has been driving the sales of the condo and the real estate market. Offshore investment. It's all flight capital coming in from Central South America, Europe. Russian money has dried up. That all went to North Miami. Brickell, you know, that when the banks were basically selling off the condos at floors at a time, that was all Eastern European Russian money. That's all drying up very, very quickly. You look at all these buildings under construction here, you know, who, you know, you think, what is the average starting price in any of these buildings, these units, you know? You know, $1 million, $700,000. Each of these buildings has how many units? 300 to 400 units. Do the math. How many people are out here that can actually afford that kind of a mortgage, that kind of a monthly maintenance fee? Yeah, and live here. You know, and it's a really, and this time around there isn't going to be a bailout. So I'm really worried for our economy here in South Florida, especially. We were ground zero the last time. I don't see it out of the realm of possibilities that we could be ground zero again for the next big collapse. And this time ain't going to be a bailout. And that's what I'm really, really, really worried about.
Just a few miles away from where Kent Bondi and I met lives Ann Reese. I visited her the day a neighbor was out mowing his grass. Ann is married with two young kids. She was born in Jamaica and came to South Florida when she was 13. She's 48 now, and she is a citizen. It was her day off from work. Her youngest was in daycare while her oldest child was in kindergarten. She describes herself as a liberal Democrat.
Every election is important to me. I always vote.
Are you hearing anything from either of the presidential candidates that gives you optimism about your personal prosperity should they be elected president?
No, not really.
Both candidates have talked about tax plans regarding childcare, for instance. Both candidates have talked about changing and in large degree lowering personal income tax rates for certain income levels. Hillary Clinton has talked about a college payment plan. Donald Trump has talked about trade. Have any of those hit a chord with you?
Well, yeah, it would have been great to have someone to pay for college when I was in college. I paid my college loans forever after I graduated, you know, and now I have two children coming up. I have one who's I've enrolled in the Florida prepaid program, and that still I don't think would be enough to get him into a four-year university when his time comes. The other one I do plan on enrolling, but the time has not come as yet for me to get her into that program. And even with saving that little bit of amount of money out of what I do earn, that's not going to be enough. So, yes, the free college program would be great, great, if that were to be. I don't know how it's going to happen, but we'll see. I'm hopeful.
Tell me, Anne, what are the issues that you hold dear that you are going to use to decide who you'll vote for?
Well, the economy. I mean, the two candidates, they seem like they have great views as far as what they want to do with the economy. I do not trust Mr. Trump as much. I do feel that if you do lower taxes for everyone, then it may benefit the lower income earning people. But I don't see why that is necessary for the people who make so much to begin with. And I feel that it won't allow enough funds to fund the programs that we do need, the social programs that we do need. I mean, if you take away money from the social programs, then that's just going to be worse for people who need those social programs. So I don't really think that's a good idea.
When you talk about the economy, what do you mean? What specifically do you mean for you and those kind of financial issues that you'll take with you to the ballot box?
Well, making more money. I mean, but how does a candidate influence a company to want to pay their employees more? How do you do that? I don't see how they can do that. So making more money is always more important to me because at the end of the day, I need to take care of my family. I don't know how they're going to do that. Are they going to put a gun to a corporation's head and say, you got to pay your people more? You know, I mean, they talk about it, but how are you going to get it done? So I don't know.
We've heard from both presidential candidates in this election cycle. We hear from all presidential candidates in all election cycles about the need to create jobs and the need to create good paying jobs. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that these two candidates are saying regarding job creation that you haven't heard before?
No.
Ann Reese, a self-described liberal Democrat who cares about social justice and economic equality. Still to come, as the Sunshine Economy continues, the dissatisfaction from a trio of South Florida voters about their choices.
Both candidates, most of the time, are wrong.
Our economy is so broken now that the average person growing up cannot figure out where they're ever going to fit.
I've heard about people talking about cutting taxes, but I've never, in my 60 years, I've never seen where it had that much of an impact on how much money people made.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. We're talking with voters today to hear what they're thinking about this election and what issues they'll be taking with them to the ballot box. These are three members of the WLRN Miami Herald Public Insight Network.
Juan Tomas Sanchez. I came from Cuba in 1961 when I was 18 years old. I've been working most of my life around Florida, but also overseas. I left the Republican Party in 1988 when they didn't nominate Elizabeth Dole, and I've been an independent since.
Hi, I'm Leanne Barber. I've been in South Florida since 2009, so about 7 years. I came here virtually as a retiree. My interest is in social welfare.
My name is Andy Haraldson. My family originally moved here in 1970. I moved away for a while, came back. I'm currently an English instructor at Miami-Dade College. I don't really affiliate with any one political side more than the other.
We invited these three to come and talk with us together. Juan started by saying he's confused by the candidates this election.
When you narrow it down economics to the three or four main issues, which are trade, taxes, regulations, and the environment, you find that both candidates most of the time are wrong on most issues.
Wrong according to the things that you would like them to be doing and the policies you'd like to hear from them?
No, I think wrong from reality. You know, for instance, trade. It's very hard to go and retrade the North American trade with Mexico, because when we negotiated the first time, we were winners. So why do you want to negotiate again with Mexico? You know, you won the first time. Taxes is also very, very important. In that, you know, we are hoping to have a competitive tax rate with the rest of the world, but the Democratic Party really don't want to change that. On the other hand, the Republicans want to lower personal tax. I don't see why you want to lower their personal tax from the current 39.5%. Leave it there. Same thing with long-term asset gains.
Long-term capital gains.
Gains. In regulations, I think the National Labor Relations Board has gone overboard in the last 8 years. You know, somebody has to really hold them back and change some things a little bit. Same thing, Dodd-Frank. If you talk to small local bankers, they're very upset with the Dodd-Frank regulations. And energy, I think you have to accept the world vision that there's a change in the environment that we humans are responsible for. But how you implemented that, you don't hurt the 99% that have barely any income. How you integrate and you respect them. So it's confusing because both candidates are wrong in most issues.
Leanne, help Juan sort through his confusion. Do you share his confusion?
I'm basically a Democratic-leaning, socialist-leaning person, and I was for Bernie Sanders, not for him as an individual, but because I think that to have a healthy community, you need some things like universal health care. And I think that we've spoken so much on how we can gobble up all the resources and dominate other countries, and both candidates really feel that way. So they all want to intervene all over the world. And what it's caused, and with the trade with NAFTA, what it's caused is it's caused this incredible dislocation of people. And, you know, we've shipped all of our jobs overseas because we want low-cost goods. And what has happened is our economy is so broken now that the average person growing up cannot figure out where they're ever going to fit in society and where they're going to make their contribution. So they're told, you need to get a professional job, right? And we have this kind of world vision that America is going to be the professional class, and we're all going to be the white-collar workers, and then all those dirty third-world jobs are going to be pushed overseas somewhere, and we can just lean back and relax and enjoy and entertain ourselves. And I don't think it's working for a lot of people in our country. And that's why why Trump has support from the white working class people, because the working class people have been abandoned by the Democratic Party. So I guess I see the world view a little bit different. And I see both of those candidates trying to maintain this domination theology that says that we've got to be the best, and we want everybody in the world to adopt our way of life, yet our way of life is declining for a very large percentage of our population.
Andy, where do you fit in to this? The confusion that Juan articulates, the world vision that Leanne takes exception to in terms of the American vision. Where do you fit in?
I tend to look at things from a practical matter, and also from, you know, a matter of that would apply to my experience also. I mean, for example, Juan mentioned lowering taxes, and I've heard about people talking about cutting taxes, but I've never, in my 60 years, I've never seen where it had that much of an impact on how much money people made. So, you know, when they talk about cutting taxes here and cutting taxes there, that doesn't mean much to me. People need to earn more money. I think that both in real and real terms, income has gone down, but also in relative terms as well. You know, prices have gone up a lot faster than income as well. So we have to, rather than arguing about ways to, like, how little we can pay, what's the minimum wage, we need to be, that's an obsolete paradigm.
But as far as taxes, what I was saying, Andy, is I wouldn't change the personal tax rate that we have in effect now, which really goes as high as 39.6%. And if you're over $5 million, then it's another 4%. I wouldn't touch it like the Republicans would like to touch it.
Donald Trump's tax plan is to reduce that considerably.
But I think Donald Trump's plan to make the corporate rate start with negotiating at 15%, but at least make it competitive with the rest of the world, because in a corporate environment, you know, a manager goes to the board and says, I want to renew my plant. I want to upgrade my plant and save money. And the question is, how soon would we recover the investment? If taxes are 39%, you don't recover your investment, let's say, in 10 years. But if taxes is 15%, you probably recover that investment in 3 years. So it makes a big difference.
Juan, what do you say to Andy, though, for someone who says, you know, for the better part of 4 decades and working, you have not seen an impact in an income based upon tax cuts?
Absolutely. He's absolutely right. I've never seen an impact and I've been in the middle, you know. I haven't been making anything, just the wages that an engineer could make in corporate America. But I haven't. You're right, Andy. You know, I haven't seen a change.
I agree with what Juan is saying. If a 39% corporate tax is not practical, if it's not working, well, then that has to be adjusted.
The 39% is a personal income tax rate. The 35% is the corporate tax rate.
Oh, yeah. Well, if a 39% is not working, well, I to tell you the truth, I've never been in that tax bracket. So I couldn't say, you know, hey, if I'm making $10 million a year and I got to pay 39% instead of 30%, well, that would add up to a lot. But I've never made that kind of money. The kind of money that I've always made, I've never made a lot of money. And so, you know, I've done well, I've done better at other times, at some times than others, but the kind of money I've made when a president, like, you know, a candidate, regardless of political party, in this case, I guess it's Donald Trump, is talking about cutting my tax rate, I'm thinking that's nice, but I don't see why that's even an issue. I mean, it's all in every election cycle, it's an issue. Or we're going to lower taxes and it's going to be need more money for hardworking Americans. And I'm thinking, well, I've been around for quite a while. I'm a pretty educated guy, pretty smart, and I've never seen it. I've never seen where it made much, maybe a couple of bucks on my paycheck. No, that's not going to make much difference in my life.
I don't think I've felt that either candidate really cares about what I have to say.
Why not?
Because I think people I don't know. I think most people have made up their minds and are not going to be that persuaded.
Leanne Barber, Andy Haroldson, and Juan Tomas Sanchez talking politics, frustration, and confusion. Still to come, the conversation continues about economic prosperity and politics.
I don't think that either president is going to make a whole lot of difference in my personal economic situation.
I'm not concerned with myself. You know, I already have a Social Security and two part-time jobs.
What I am concerned about is that the things that contributed to my prosperity over my lifetime are no longer available to the young people coming up.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. We're talking with voters today about economic issues and this election. The economy consistently is mentioned in voter surveys as the most important problem for the country. And now in Florida, like elsewhere in the country, that means jobs, wages, and opportunity. While the unemployment rate in Florida is below the nation's, the average household wage in Florida is also lower than the national average. Since President Obama took office, Florida's job market growth rate ranks fourth in the nation, behind North Dakota, Utah, and Texas. The Joint Economic Committee of Congress finds Florida's job market jumped 15.8% in the past 8 years, adding almost 1 million jobs. We brought together three voters, two of whom are retired. Leanne Barber worked in information technology before moving to Florida in retirement. Juan Tomas Sanchez came to Miami from Cuba in the early 1960s. They told us they're not concerned about their prosperity, but they are worried about future generations. They were joined by Andy Haroldson, who works part-time as an English instructor at Miami-Dade College.
As you listen to the candidates as well as the political parties, Andy, are you hearing anything that gives you hope and optimism that your prosperity is going to increase under one party's leadership or one person's leadership than the other?
No. Maybe the country as a whole, but my personal situation, I don't think that either president is going to make a whole lot of difference in my personal economic situation.
Well, I think that I'm not concerned with myself.
This is Juan Tomas Sanchez speaking. He was 18 when he came to Florida from Cuba. He worked as an engineer building pharmaceutical plants in Latin America. He says he left the Republican Party in 1988 and describes himself today as an independent. He's retired now.
You know, I already have a Social Security and two part-time jobs. So either president is not going to change that at 73 years old. But I think, yes, the wealth of the nation is very important in my mind. At my age, I'm not worried about myself or my kids, you know. But I'm thinking about the wealth of the nation, how we improve the standard of living in this nation.
And are you hearing anything articulated from, again, either presidential candidate or the parties that gives you optimism that prosperity is going to increase under their leadership?
No, because we're facing a deadlock in Congress. You know, either the Democrat or the Republican is not going to change Congress. That probably is going to stay the same after this election. So what would happen is that probably a Republican president can get more changes out of a Republican Congress than a Democrat president, you know, probably be the same thing. So
I share the same views of Juan, is that I'm not concerned about my personal prosperity.
That's Leanne Barber. She's lived in South Florida for 7 years after retiring from her work in information technology. She says her political interests lie in social welfare.
Because I'm, you know, basically retired and I've got myself planned. But what I'm concerned about is that the things that contributed to my prosperity over my lifetime are no longer available to the young people coming up.
Such as?
Such as jobs, such as a, you know, better distribution between income and expenses. I mean, I was able to have a modest income and a modest expense. I was able to have a job. You know, when I started out in IT in the early 80s, there were headquarters in every city in the U.S. And so I actually worked in Seattle. There were 5 banks headquartered there. They all had their own IT departments. Lots of jobs for those people. And over my lifetime, and I contributed it through my automation processes, we consolidated and got rid of thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs. The MBA theology that's practiced in the country today is all about cost reduction.
Andy, you're laughing at that description.
Theology?
It is theology.
I agree that I like the word, I like the use of the words religionistic and religionism, wherein religious principles are actually applied to, in this case, masters of business administration study. Hmm. It's you described it as a theology, and I think that that's great.
And they all subscribe to the same kind of belief system. So all of the business graduates in the U.S. and the world are being taught virtually the same thing, which is, you know, you gotta squeeze out costs, you gotta be more efficient, you gotta look to shareholder value, and the rest of the people be damned, because it's all about you know, really managing to those numbers, and those numbers are only what, you know, what the bottom line numbers of the firm are. So I see the young people, and I work with 4-H'ers. It's a volunteer organization that teaches kids life skills. I see them having a really tough time of it. And they are very worried about their future, because they're being taught that they need to, you know, get a college education and life will be grand. But there are some people that can't afford a college education, aren't really adaptable to be a white-collar professional. And for them, there is, like, no place.
To some degree, the America that you're describing is that America that the Trump campaign is positioning itself to Definitely. Its supporters.
Definitely. And I think that's why it has so much appeal. And I think the question is you've got to really break that down and say what aspects, because there are some aspects of America that were much better than today. There were some aspects that were much worse. And so sometimes I think it's code for, you know, let's go back to when white man rules. And that's not, you know, that is what a lot of people are hearing, and they don't like that. So they're afraid.
What are you hearing when you describe your past as prologue to the mm-hmm. present and the future? What are you hearing?
I think that, like I said, my African American friends are all really afraid of Trump, because they think that he's going to make it much more difficult for them, and they're going to lose the gains that they've had. Some of my older white friends, especially the ones that are kind of down on their luck, are really ardent Trump supporters, and they are fixed in their ideas because they feel like the democratic process hasn't really worked for them. And I have to say they're right. We were really successful as America bringing in immigrants from all over the world to work here and prosper and contribute. I mean, I'm from South Dakota, you're from Iowa. That's all about the immigrant force. Putting in sweat equity,
yeah.
Really putting in sweat equity to make a better life for their future. And a lot of those ways of making sweat equity now are no longer available to people.
Leanne Barber is a retired technology professional living today in Broward County. She was talking with Andy Haroldson, part-time instructor at Miami-Dade College, and Cuban-American Juan Tomas Sanchez, who's a retired engineer. Still to come, voter concerns stretching across 2 generations.
The environment has become a much bigger topic for me.
Anything that strengthens the middle class here in South Florida.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. This election is different for Charles Walter, and it's not just because of the presidential candidates. It's also because, like a lot of voters, his concerns have changed in the past 4 years. Having a kid will do that. Charles and his wife have a 2-year-old daughter. He's 39. That makes him a young Generation Xer or an old millennial. His mom came from Cuba. His wife is from Colombia. Charles and his wife moved to South Florida from New York 5 years ago before starting a family. He works in technology in what can pass as a high-rise building in downtown Coral Gables. He says he spends most of his time at work speaking Spanish, as his work is concentrated in Latin America. We found a quiet conference room on a floor above his office to talk politics and what's driving the choices he will make this fall.
For me, it's where we're heading as a country and what the president represents, the vision that they're setting for future generations. So I think that includes everything from economy to immigration, education.
Are you hearing that big voice, those kind of broad visions that you'd like to hear?
The news seems to put a lot of attention on things that don't matter, things like the Trump saying he agrees that Obama was born in the U.S., or topics about Hillary and the email scandal, and not enough attention on the issues.
The argument is those are character questions, right? That those go to the character of the candidate. You don't feel that way, though.
I think that they've just been given proportionally too much weight. I'd rather hear dedicated discussions on each topic.
How has your interest in this election cycle changed at all now that you've got a family, now that you have a 2-year-old daughter, compared to the last presidential cycle?
It's changed tremendously. I really do think about not just the impact that the candidate's going to have in my life, but what it's going to mean for her life. I probably start thinking further out in terms of where things are going to be when I'm looking to retire and when my daughter is going to be looking for a job. And everything from what it means for public schools that she will likely attend, all the way through college to looking for jobs in 20 years.
How do you think it's changed the kinds of issues that you're listening for and that you'd like to hear from the candidates before you make a decision?
The environment has become a much bigger topic for me. I really think, you know, you hear about sea level rise and it seems like something that's so far out there, but when you think that 20 years from now we're 2036 and the number of feet that you could be potentially seeing here in Florida as far as an increase in sea level rise, obviously that's critical.
When we hear debates around tax policy, childcare tax credits, paternity leave, maternity leave, do any of those begin to find support for you and your family?
My wife and I are fortunate that we have an incredible daycare across the street from where my wife works. We're involved in a community which I think is very supportive of the local elementary school. I think that my interests are not so much a matter of our own daughter, but making sure that all the children of this country have the opportunities to be able to prosper in the future.
You work and have worked with multinational companies. You have to see a broad landscape of countries. How would you describe the tenor of the political debate here in the United States and the impact that that is having as you look at a portfolio of countries that you operate with?
When I speak with people who have come to the States, and they're saying this is the first election that they're witnessing as either American or as a resident, they are shocked to see the way the election is being handled. And they thought that it was going to be much different than the elections in their countries. And they've been very surprised by that.
What do you tell them?
I generally tell them that I think the media is driving a lot of that, because the media is constantly looking for ways to increase ratings. The more outspoken candidates seem to get a lot more attention than the candidates who may be not necessarily expressing anything controversial. I was very surprised that John Kasich didn't get more attention during the primaries. I think he had a lot of great ideas, but he wasn't controversial. He was keeping his his stance on the issues and tried not to, to stand up to Trump. And in the end, I think you see what happened. The media has more of a responsibility to try to stay on the issues and to help inform the voters to make informed decisions.
Do you think the media has been failing in this election cycle doing that?
Tremendously. I think the moment that Donald Trump announced his candidacy, the media on both sides jumped on the opportunity to use every single minute of their airtime to give him attention. And that when I say media, I don't even refer to the traditional media. I think even you and I, as voters, or all my friends on social media, they continued to extend the voice of Donald Trump, giving him attention. And I actually have a blocker in Facebook that will prevent anything on my newsfeed showing up about Donald Trump.
That tells us a little about your politics, Charles, I think, maybe here, right?
What it says is that I think there's too much attention by the media on him, whether I like him or not.
A few days after talking with Charles Walter, I met Ellen Walker as a worker was sweeping the stage floor at the Abyss stage in Wilton Manors. Walker was getting ready for closing night for a play she was producing with her company, Pigs Do Fly. A courtroom set was on stage as we sat on the front row a few hours before the final performance. Ellen retired a few years ago from Miami-Dade County, where she was a lobbyist for the county. She's in her 70s and has her own website for her acting and theater producing work. Politically, she describes herself as a lifelong liberal.
I wouldn't know how to be anything else. Periodically throughout the years, I would date somebody that wasn't, and I could never cross that line. So that is who I am.
She's a baby boomer and has this observation about this peculiar presidential race.
I think it's fabulous that nobody's saying Hillary and Donald are senior citizens on Medicare. If nothing else is good about the presidential election, and I got to tell you, I don't know that anything else is good about the presidential election.
Now, Donald Trump is 70 years old. Hillary Clinton will be 69 on Election Day. For Ellen Walker, one of the biggest issues for her this election cycle is security, personal security for her and her community, and economic security for the country.
It's got to be in how we can be secure and or feel more secure without being afraid all the time. And that's a big one, because it seems like I always believed in gun control. So seeing the proliferation of guns on every corner does not make me feel more secure, but I don't have an answer. So that would be one thing. And the other thing is economics. Candidates and businesses talk the talk, may not walk the walk, by shipping their businesses all over the world. And workers, we've declined the middle class. The middle class has declined in this country. That bothers me. When I got a graduate degree from the University of Michigan, and one of the courses I took was in economics. I thought I'd hate it, but I loved it. And it said, what made America strong and different was a vital middle class. And I always watch for that.
Are you hearing anything from either the presidential candidates or the parties in other races that give you optimism that their leadership will bolster the middle class and reverse some of the trends that you've seen over the past many years?
In my heart, I really can't say so.
And that leaves you...
Still a liberal. I honestly, and you're asking that question makes me think. Neither side has made me feel the middle class will be better. But at this moment in time, I'd love to be able to click my heels, but I can't.
Walker hopes for a Wizard of Oz moment to return to politics as she knew them. She also hopes for a return of the middle class and an affordable cost of living here in South Florida.
I would like to think that if the middle class can be stimulated, insofar as taxes, jobs coming back, anything that strengthens the middle class here in South Florida. We have the other problem of the fact that the people from Ukraine and Russia and Brazil have all bringing their money in so that the cost of housing is not achievable. I think that's what's wiped out the middle class in South Florida. If something like that can be mitigated so that the middle class can, with families, can then afford to get housing, I think that would do a great deal. I mean, I grew up down here, and it's never been as like it is now. Very rich from other countries, all those fancy little condos. And you middle class like myself, I can't move.
Walker collects Social Security and gets health coverage through Medicare. Despite some troubling financial forecasts for those programs, she says she's not worried about the solvency of Social Security or Medicare because of the fast-growing population using them. Still to come in our program, how these voters feel about being Florida voters, voters in the biggest swing state this election.
I'm sure my vote could be very, very important.
I'm going to make sure that my vote is in there should I get, God forbid, hit by a dump truck.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. No one's vote is more valuable in America than anyone else's. But perhaps more than any other state, a Floridian's vote gets more attention, certainly from the presidential candidates, because we are the swing state with the most electoral votes in play. Dive boat captain Kent Bondi doesn't think about the importance of his vote exactly, but rather the knowledge other voters take with them to their polling places.
A democracy is really dependent on the education, you know, of the electorate being educated enough to make informed decisions to vote. And I just don't think personally that many people going to the ballot box have the ability to make an informed choice necessarily all the time.
Working mom Ann Reese will be among the thousands voting early this election.
Look, I'm going to early vote. I'm going to make sure that my vote is in there should I get, God forbid, hit by a dump truck. On election day, I want to make sure that my vote is in there because I want to make sure that I do what I have to do to get the person that I want in office in office.
And she has made up her mind, but retired Cuban-American Juan Tomas Sanchez hasn't yet.
I'm sure my vote could be very, very important. If I only could make up my mind, who am I going to vote for? But it's very important. To be a Florida voter, you're almost like a kingsmaker. In the United States.
A kingsmaker in the United States. Mail-in ballots go out this week. The deadline to get registered, October 11th. Early voting starts in 3 weeks. Wanda Miles is our technical producer today. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.